With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and welcome to a mini-episode of Cinematic Universe, the podcast that's all about comic book movies, brought to you by FilmDivider.com. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and I'll be bringing you a truncated version of the show to bridge the gap between our Fantastic Four and Batman Begins episodes. On today's show, I'll give you my reactions to the comics that James and our guest Matthew Turner recommended on last week's podcast. Those were Fantastic Four, issues 52 to 60, and then zooming a whole heap of years further forward, Fantastic Four issues 570 to 575. But before any of that, let's take a look at some of the comic book movie news that has broken over the past week. Let's start with the subject of last week's show, Fantastic Four, which had a disappointing box office performance to match those disappointing reviews. The film made under $30 million in the US and just under $60 million worldwide on its opening weekend, and it looks very likely now that Fox will make a loss on the movie. Fox, for their part, remained bullish on using the characters again in the future. But interestingly, in that regard, the film rights to Fantastic Four actually lie with Constantin Films, who produced the movies alongside Fox. So if Fox did, say, decide to cancel the sequel and end their relationship with the property, it would be Constantin who would then decide where to take them next. And given that they've held them since 1986, don't expect a simple sale back to Marvel or anything like that. And we know from the complicated Incredible Hulk rights and Marvel's decision to, as of yet, not make a sequel to The Incredible Hulk, a solo Mark Ruffalo movie, it seems like Marvel don't like to share their profits. So that doesn't seem like a likely outcome either. So really, who knows what's next for those characters coming off a film that was now famously disowned by its own director on Twitter. Matt Ryan, who starred in the title role on NBC's Constantine last season, will guest star in Arrow as John Constantine, despite his own show having been cancelled by NBC. The DC characters will share the screen on the fifth episode of Arrow's upcoming fourth season. Meanwhile, The Flash has cast Keenan Lonsdale as Wally West and has also teased the arrival of Jay Garrick, with Grant Gustin and Jay Garrick actor Teddy Sears suiting up as the two Flashes to recreate the iconic cover of The Flash 123. Legends of Tomorrow has also cast its villain, Vandal Savage, with the fantastically named Danish actor Kasper Crump snagging the role. I don't know which is the better name. And also on Legends, the CW's president has confirmed that Legends of Tomorrow will be the last DC spin-off to air on that network for the time being, whilst also expressing regret on passing on Supergirl. Another interesting tidbit on Supergirl suggests that a crossover between the show and the CW superhero offerings isn't out of the question. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that if Supergirl does get a full season order at CBS, then those shows will absolutely cross over before the end of that season. I would imagine probably The Flash showing up on Supergirl first and then vice versa. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation star Rebecca Ferguson is reportedly one of three actresses testing for the lead female role in Gambit. The other two are Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol star Lea Seydoux and model Abby Lee, who has never appeared in a Mission Impossible movie to my knowledge. The part is apparently of Belladonna Boudreau, a childhood sweetheart of Gambit's who eventually develops mutant powers of her own. The Deadpool trailer finally appeared online, and it seems to be splitting opinion. It already seems pretty clear to me that this is going to be a Marmite kind of movie. Director Tim Miller has suggested that if the film does eventually get a sequel, then expect the villain to be Cable, a character who I think it's pretty surprising hasn't shown up in an X-Men movie until now. The rumoured X-Men TV show has been confirmed to be in the works at Fox, but standing in its way are negotiations which first have to take place with Marvel to secure the rights for 20th Century Fox to use the X-Men characters on the small screen. On Disney's animated shows, X-Men characters have showed up on those, so that's kind of the reason why those negotiations still need to take place. The fact that they are taking place, though, suggests that there is a real possibility that it will go forward. And I would imagine that Marvel's primary concern would be to make sure that any potential show is distanced from their own cinematic universe. And also that probably they get a fair price for the TV rights. Fox has confirmed that if the show does go ahead, it will exist within the big screen X-Men continuity. And finally, Madame Mask, a character familiar to me in particular from the pages of Hawkeye, will be a villain, potentially the villain, in Series 2 of Agent Carter. So she will be getting a distinctly 1940s spin. The character will now be an actress, with Hedy Lamarr being name-checked by the showrunners as an inspiration. And I, for one, really welcome that news. From the little I know of that character from the page, she seems like she would be a very good fit for an LA noirish crime story opposite Hayley Atwell. And also for a show that has the feminist pretensions that Agent Carter does, it gives the show a lot more to play with in that regard next year. Okay, let's move on now to discussing this week's comic book recommendations. And I think we're going to go chronologically this week. So that means we'll start off with guest Matthew Turner's recommendation, which was Fantastic Four issues 52 to 60. And so that is 9 issues in total. I read these on my Marvel Unlimited app, so I'm just having a look at that now to remember kind of basically what happened across those 9 issues. And we kind of start off with a bit of a three-issue arc involving the Black Panther. This is actually his first appearance in Marvel Comics, so he's introduced in the first issue fighting the Fantastic Four, after which they form an alliance and we get the Black Panther's origin story recalled to us, which ends with Ulysses Klaue, the character who was played by Andy Serkis in Avengers Age of Ultron, showing up to fight Black Panther at the end of that issue. There's an issue in the middle where the Silver Surfer turns up and fights the Thing, and it seems pretty throwaway compared to the rest of them until you read the issues that it builds up to, and it's very clear there is a reason why the Silver Surfer arrived. There is then another stopgap issue where Ulysses Klaue turns back up to fight the Fantastic Four on his own and has now kind of reached the peak of his powers. And Black Panther kind of helps from afar. And then we build to a final 4-issue run, which are all centered around Doctor Doom, where Doctor Doom beckons the Silver Surfer, steals his powers, which is why it was important that Silver Surfer showed up a couple of issues earlier to show off his powers, and then takes on the Fantastic Four. And it's kind of across the course of those 4 issues that the Fantastic Four are kind of able to eventually fight back against him. The first issue is basically Doom getting the powers. The second issue is him showing them off for the first time and kind of inflicting a defeat on the Fantastic Four. And then the next two show that kind of fight, the big main fight going down, and how the Fantastic Four eventually rally together to, spoiler alert, beat him. But if we go back to the start, regular Millisode listeners will know that I particularly enjoy reading Stan Lee comics, and this was no different. And honestly, it was probably the very first page that I read, I was like, okay, well, this is going to be quite a bit of fun. The big splash page at the start has a big image of the Black Panther with kind of the four members of the Fantastic Four kind of looking a lot smaller underneath him. It says, "The fabulous Fantastic Four are trapped in the incredible realm of the Black Panther." Also featuring the way out and wonderful Wyatt Wingfoot. And I had no idea who Wyatt Wingfoot was. It turns out he's just this kind of non-powered guy who's pretty cool, he's a good friend of Johnny Storm's from college, so hangs around and helps out a lot of the time. And then the bottom of this page says, "It had to be told, as only Mighty Marvel could tell it. Script by Smiling Stan Lee, art by Jolly Jackie Kirby, inking by Gentleman Joe Sinnott, lettering by Hammy Sammy Rosen." And then my favourite bit is like this little rosette in the bottom corner that says, "Voted the greatest tale of the month by Stan and Jack." I don't know whether that was a thing that they used to do a lot, but I like the idea of them dubbing their own stories the best of the month. The first issue sees the Fantastic Four going to Wakanda and fighting Black Panther. This is his origin story. So this is something that I really wasn't expecting to get from a Fantastic Four comic, but all of T'Challa's origin back in Wakanda and explanation of how Wakanda works. We watch them fight, so we kind of see Black Panther's skill set, and that it's mostly kind of like that there is some kind of mystical power because he can see in the dark, but he kind of says that it's come about from training and from like eating magical herbs. Basically, he's invited the Fantastic Four there to fight them so he can test his skills ahead of the fight that he is going to have with Claw, because Claw is his real nemesis because he killed Black Panther's father, T'Chaka, and he has this fight with them, and then basically as soon as the fight ends, he goes, which the Fantastic Four do eventually win, but kind of like, because he didn't know that, is it Wally Wingfoot, the guy I was just talking about, I've already forgotten his name, Wyatt Wingfoot, he has been off disabling some tech that frees Johnny, and so he thinks he's already defeated Johnny, but everyone has been freed by Wyatt, and that's what eventually enables the Fantastic Four to beat Black Panther. Also running through this issue is a callback to something that's already obviously happened on the pages of Fantastic Four, but again, something I really wasn't expecting to see here, which is the Inhumans. And the Inhumans that I believe are probably going to be the ones that we see on the big screen after Infinity War Part 2, which is... So there's Black Bolt and Gorgon and Medusa and Crystal and Maximus, who seems to be like a stupid version of Loki, the like jealous brother of Black Bolt who wants the throne for his own. And they are stuck in some negative zone, which I'm not sure is the same negative zone as in the movie I just watched, but it's because they're like basically just stuck inside a dome, like just stuck there. And they are stuck there in pretty much, I think, like 8 of these 9 issues. I think it's maybe only the last one that they've actually got out of this dome, but it's told very slowly, unfolds over the 9 issues with maybe like 2 or 3 pages at a time, just diverting from the main narrative to tell the story of what the Inhumans are getting up to in this little negative zone. And it basically... Again, something that I just wasn't expecting to see in these comics, and surprised me quite how much of the future Marvel Cinematic Universe goes back to these early issues of the Fantastic Four. And when we got onto James's recommendation, it probably, if I'd have read them the other way around, I might not have been so surprised to see the Inhumans in the Fantastic Four, because the Jonathan Hickman Fantastic Four certainly suggested that there are some pretty far-out concepts in the Fantastic Four. And it's not just these guys who hang out in this building. There is dimension hopping, and there is space travel, and there is all kinds of unexpected things showing up on those pages. That it's the real, like, experimental sector of the Marvel Universe. Inhumans and Black Panther and Ulysses Klaue all in these first couple of issues of Matt's recommendation. And so in the second issue, we get the full backstory of Black Panther, and he defeats Klaue for the first time. We see Klaue's powers, and quite a lot of the powers and quite a lot of the stuff that's going on in these 9 issues seems to be regarding vibrations and sound waves. So vibranium turns up a lot, and there is Yuzi's claw with his sound, but then everyone seems to be affecting their density and stuff, like with the Silver Surfer's powers as well when he shows up, and some of the gadgets that Reed Richards comes up with to try and defeat their foes. It seems to be constantly coming back to sound and vibrations, and Claw's eventual power is to turn sound into solid form, and he eventually is a being who is made of solid sound when he does find his full abilities. And there's similar stuff going on there with the mute Black Bolt in the neutral zone, eventually using his voice to free them from that neutral zone. The fourth issue, which kind of diverts away from the Black Panther, he's around. They play a game of baseball with him at the start. But that sees Johnny, who's kind of away from the team for an awful lot of this, but he's with Wyatt quite a lot of the time. He starts off at college and he comes back for the Wakanda stuff, but even when it comes to the Doctor Doom fights at the end, he is separate from them, and it's only right at the end that he joins them after realising that his constant attempts to defeat Doctor Doom on his own are not going to work. And in that fourth issue, he encounters a character called the Wanderer, who seems to be like a medieval knight who has been in some kind of stasis ever since the 12th century or something like that. It was probably my least favourite issue. And Johnny gets his hands on this device that he thinks might be able to free one of the Inhumans, who he happens to be in love with, which is pretty much the link between those two narratives all the way through here. Is that Johnny and Crystal have had some kind of relationship and both desperately want to be reunited. In these nine issues, they're not. They don't find each other within these nine, but that was the link between these two kind of disparate narratives running through these nine issues. I should actually say, on the main characters, I, in this version of the Fantastic Four, really warmed to the Thing. Johnny is a little bit snarky and kind of the quippy guy that I guess I've seen represented in more modern movies, but not the smart ass that he is in the Jonathan Hickman comics. He is still kind of like a golly gee whiz kind of kid in the way that Spider-Man was as well, reading this era of comics. And so I didn't really feel that he could quite ever in that situation fulfill my kind of idea of what the character is or was. But the Thing, I felt like didn't seem like he was existing in a 60s comic at all. He was kind of like a comedy side figure, but like tinged with this tragedy. And just every time he showed up, I kind of liked him just going, no, I'm going to solve this situation with my fists on every occasion. And Reed having to pull him back so often and say, no, don't do that. And he's like, I'm going to do it anyway. And kind of realize afterwards why he shouldn't have done something. But he's funny, and his quipping in his fights with the Silver Surfer and Doctor Doom, it's not quite quipping. It's almost like responding to the like comic book dialogue with a bit of like, shut up, I'm going to punch you. And it's just constantly, it's clobbering time again. And so I really liked him. Sue is pretty irrelevant for most of it. She really does just stand in the background, and she kind of is just the wife, which is disappointing. I was actually quite surprised that in the final battle with Doctor Doom at the end of the ninth issue, that she actually does have some impact on the fight with Doom. It's not the key thing. The key thing is what Reed does. Reed saves the day. But at least Sue, for once, it felt like she was constantly being very easily defeated by... Like, she was quite easily defeated by Black Panther and then Claw, and when Doom shows up the first time. And
hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, there isn't much that character in this version other than she is the fourth and only female character in the group. Reed is clearly presented as this genius, this kind of like more sensible, thoughtful elder statesman of the group. That family dynamic of the Reed and Sue being the parents and Johnny and Ben being the kids is definitely there. There is a even if Ben, I don't know how old Ben is supposed to be. He didn't seem as young to me as Johnny, but there was definitely kind of like Sue and Reed constantly looking after him and kind of placating him and telling him that, you know, how vital a part of the team he was, and looking after him when like he got airsick or something like that. So the thing was definitely my favorite of the characters here. Silver Surfer was pretty much what I expected. This just cosmic being with like almost unlimited powers, but kind of amazed by the world. In fact, he reminded me a lot of the Vision. I'm not sure how much difference there is in character between the version of the Vision that I read in the Avengers comics on the last minisode and Silver Surfer in this. His powers are probably different, although I'm not quite sure how. So Doctor Doom eventually acquires those powers, and I'll be honest, I didn't feel like a huge amount of character development went down in these comics. Doom was introduced, he was a character that you just had to know already existed, which it's not hard when he's an iconic villain like Doctor Doom. I'm still not sure what Doom's powers are because he's just playing with the Silver Surfers and all of this, but he basically gets like near indestructible powers and kind of manipulate anything at his will and is easily defeating the Fantastic Four all the way through these issues. And it does take Reed outsmarting him with his intellect, getting Doctor Doom to fly out into space after this weapon that Reed has created to fell him. And that works because the Silver Surfer has been forced by Galactus to stay on Earth. So when the Silver Surfer's powers leave the Earth, they are taken from him. Presumably by Galactus. And we don't see what happens to Doctor Doom, but I'm going to guess he returns. These are more 60s comics that I would say the same thing kind of I said for Spider-Man and the same thing I said for the Avengers, which is that these are really fun to read. They're really wordy. They take a lot longer to read than modern comics, I find. But there's a whole lot to like. There's fun in the storytelling. And as someone who has an interest in the origins of lots of Marvel characters and the kind of how they've been treated on the page over the years, ahead of seeing a lot of them on the screen or having just seen them on the screen and wondering how they differ to on the page, it's really great to go like right back to very early on in their roots and see good stories told around them. Let's move on now to James's recommendation, though, which is from the same series, Fantastic Four, but this is issues 570 to 575. A lot more recent. It's from the on Marvel Unlimited, the original one's the same from the 1961 run of the comic, and this is from the 1998 run of the comic. Matt's recommendations were published in 1966 and 1967, whereas James's are from 2009-2010. I think that the first thing that really, really needs to be said about the Jonathan Hickman version of the Fantastic Four, this is written by Jonathan Hickman and drawn by Dale Eaglesham, and Reed Richards looks like David Beckham. Like, not just even a little bit. He is the spitting image of David Beckham. And I'm not sure whether it's intentional. But I kind of like looked at him in the first couple of pages and I'm like, who does he look? It's David Beckham. He looks like David Beckham, doesn't he? And then the further into the comic I got, and as you get to the end of the first issue, we are introduced to dozens of different versions of Reed Richards from all kind of different dimensions. Some of them are bald, and some of them are different shapes and have different costumes and different powers. But the one constant is that they all very much look like David Beckham. to the point where when I saw the bald-headed one with a beard, I was like, no, this is getting silly now. I think they've just traced a picture of him. I'm not sure whether that was something that would have ever occurred to James when reading, but yeah. Certainly was very distracting for me. But these 6 issues, which are make up the first trade paperback of Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four, I've read them all on Marvel Unlimited. But the story here, and I was reading, there was an interview with Jonathan Hickman on one of the like back pages of one of these comics where the letter pages normally are. There was an interview with Jonathan Hickman, and he was talking about kind of what he felt was the problem with Fantastic Four as far as he was concerned before he came onto the book. And he was saying that he felt that it had kind of become Reed Richards and his amazing friends, and that his response to that was to take over the comic and do a 2-3 issue arc to start it off, which is pretty much to all Reed Richards, which I quite like, but it's kind of a way of resetting that character. And I mean, I don't know what came before, but from the character that's at the start of the first page, the character you get in the second half is a character who makes a conscious decision to make a change in his life and a change in his ambitions as a superhero, to be a better family man and spend and kind of be a hero in a different way. But Reed kind of goes off and he has this portal to these other dimensions that he has neglected telling Sue about. And he's also got the two kids in this version. So there's Franklin Richards and Valeria, his son and daughter. So, like, the idea of him trying to be a family man is kind of magnified when he has kids as well. But he has this ideas room with this portal server dimensions, which at the end of the first issue he travels through and meets these alternate versions of himself. And in the second issue, you kind of spend time with him and these other people. I mean, and these other Reed Richards seem to be, like, kind of ridiculously powerful. They can affect things across multiple dimensions and universes. And the final image of the first page shows three Reed Richardses, all of the first issue shows three Reeds all wearing complete Infinity Gauntlets, which I know must suggest that they have a whole lot of power. And so they kind of say to Reed, look, we're going to show you all of what we do over the course of a week, and at the end of this week you need to decide whether you want to join us or not. You know, we can show you the good and the bad and the sacrifices we have to make to do the good that we do. So they show him these entire planets that they've terraformed into food sources so that no one in their worlds ever have to go hungry. And they show him like how they can just pull a piece of dark matter out of a star to stop that star from dying and save 8 billion people who live in the universe where that star, you know, going around that star. The kind of sacrifice that they have to make in terms of doing good is that they have rounded up Doctor Dooms from multiple universes and put a collar around their neck, which kind of permanently destroys all of their higher brain functions, and they become just kind of brainless vegetables. And so Reed kind of has to decide whether he can take that side of things to affect all of the good. And by the end of the first issue, he kind of decides that he does want to. And the story is permeated by little flashbacks to him and his father when he was younger. And they're really good at informing the character and kind of the struggles that Reed Richards has always had as a man, and wanting to be kind of around people that are also like him. That he's always been popular, but he has always felt out of place, and then suddenly he has this universe where everyone is like him and they can achieve the goals that he desperately wants to achieve. He wants to save everything. He wants to affect everything. He feels like he has all these powers and he should use them. And so eventually he decides to make that sacrifice and join these other Reed Richardses. And that is the point when Celestials attack. And I don't know what Celestials are, but they look like giant kind of scary creatures who easily wipe out loads of these versions of Reed Richards. So they're clearly very, very powerful. And I seem to remember that one of the planets in Guardians of the Galaxy was the severed head of a Celestial. So I've written, that's probably what I know of them from before. But basically Reed goes back and kind of helps. He is the Reed Richards that essentially wins the battle for all of them and kills the Celestials and causes the rest of them to retreat. But he's then told that the kind of the additional sacrifice that he didn't realise is that none of these other Reeds have families. Like, they all have their own versions of their families, but to be part of this, you know, Reed Richards supergroup, they can't. They have all had to sacrifice that. They don't have family lives because they want to have a bigger impact. And this is great flashback to a scene between young Reed and his dad. And his dad talking about how he can't be a good man and a great man, and that his one hope for Reed is that one day maybe he will find the ability to be good and great at the same time. And it seems like that his dad made the decision to be great and left a young Reed Richards to fend for himself, and sacrificed being a good family man. And Reed then remembers his words saying, "I want you to be a better friend than I was," and pitches himself with Ben and Johnny, "be a better husband," and pitches himself with Sue, and then "be a better father," and pitches himself with Franklin and Valeria. And the final page of the issue is him just simply walking out of the room to greet Sue, and it says, "Reed, be a better man." And so Reed makes the decision that he is going to be more of a family guy than this interdimensional superhero, and that there's some stuff that he is going to have to walk away from and leave to other people. And all that stuff, I mean, this is a comic that routinely reminded me of All-Star Superman, which is something that I really loved reading. But just this ambition, this sometimes incoherent ambition, or maybe not incoherent, but confusing, or maybe takes a second read, or maybe takes a little bit longer to think about, to actually get your head around the ideas and the themes and the content. But eventually it really does come together into something really interesting. And I don't think this is on the level of All-Star Superman, or maybe so these first few issues that I read maybe weren't quite there yet. But they certainly made me very impressed in a way that I didn't expect to be from Fantastic Four comics. And I loved this big kind of crazy story that was underpinned by a huge character decision, and that's kind of what it was all in service of. And they were my favorite parts of this arc. The next issue is a crazy one where Johnny and Ben, with Val and Franklin tagging along, go to this crazy alternate planet where there is a son of, I think it's the son of Hulk, maybe it's Hulkling, I don't know, who is around, and there is this kind of guy who is made of light, and this one, and this brain that is running around on legs. And I had no idea what was going on through the whole issue. I was entertained, but I did not know what was going on. And that was my least favourite, and I won't talk about it too much because I just didn't get it. Just on a plot level, I wasn't really sure what was going on. But then the next issue was right back to where it started, which was Franklin Richards' birthday. And it's a really fun issue, just again grounding character stuff, seeing this family hang out as a family. Spider-Man shows up to the party, And it seems like a full-on character piece with just all these Fantastic Four characters hanging around and having fun with each other. Until at the end, someone arrives from the future, puts up an invisible barrier that the Fantastic Four can't get through, goes and speaks to Valeria and said that he was sent to give her a warning that the future must be avoided at all costs. And then he says, listen closely, because each word I say was carefully chosen. It is just for you, Val. No one else can know this. There will be a war between the four cities. The dead must not be forgotten. The future man must return to save the past. And all hope lies in doom. And this page is kind of, it has like kids' crayon drawings in the background, which reminded me of some Daredevil that I'd read. She says to him, why should I believe you? And he says, because you're the one who sent me here. And then she recognises something that the Fantastic Four do not, which that this is a future version of Franklin, who has been sent back to speak to her. And it doesn't play in hugely to everything that I read in the others, but it seemed like a real tease of what's to come. And the final issue is then, the final image of the issue is then Franklin Richards, and it says, all alone in his room, a little boy creates a baby universe. And it's Franklin hiding under his bed sheets, creating a universe between his fingertips. That's kind of what I mean about the All-Star Superman side of it. Like, it did remind me of that, like, just occasionally I was really enjoying what I was reading, but kind of baffled. Yeah, and then the final issue concerns the Mole Man turning up, where there is this weird underground city that has been taken over by his mole creatures, and that city then ascends to the surface, and there is some really weird stuff that goes on in that issue, and it's very much like the other one that I didn't really understand. And I think that this maybe is going to be a theme with this series if I do continue reading, that they may be very hit and miss, but there is going to be some fantastic stuff in there. And like I say, so four of these issues I really, really loved. And the other two, I didn't not enjoy reading them. I just didn't understand them hugely. But yeah, generally, I was just really surprised by what the Fantastic Four is on the page, especially compared to what I've seen on the screen. And I do think it probably would be difficult to get some of that across on the screen or get to some of that more far out stuff quickly, which is obviously what the more recent film was trying to do by going straight into the negative zone. But I'm so much more intrigued by the Fantastic Four on the page than I ever thought I would be. And I enjoyed reading their origins, but I think if there's something that I would want to continue reading, it is this this current Fantastic Four, especially with that tease to the future. And that seems to be setting up a big story. And James seems to suggest that he has run kind of all the way through to Secret Wars at present. So maybe if I do decide to continue reading, I need to strap in for the long haul. But that is it for this week. Don't forget that the next episode of Cinematic Universe will be covering Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins. If you're enjoying the show, then please do subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or your podcast app of choice. And if you've already subscribed, then please leave us a rating or review, and we'll give you a shout-out on a future show. You can find more episodes of Cinematic Universe on cinematicuniverse.libsyn.com, or, as we're a Film Divider podcast, at filmdivider.com. You can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter, at @CU_podcast, or send us an email to cinematicuniversepod@gmail.com. See you next week.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.